Welcome to the Charleston School of Law podcast. I'm your host, John Struble. If you enjoy the show, we hope you'll subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or you can listen to streaming audio interviews on our website at charlestonlaw.edu/podcast. A quick programming note coming up on February 25th. Charleston School of Law and our friends at Furman University and the Riley Institute are going to present the 14th Annual Law in Society Symposium. This event will be held at the Charleston Museum Auditorium. You can register to join us online at charlestonlaw.edu/symposium. Now, on with the show. Welcome back to the Charleston School of Law podcast. I'm your host, John Struble, and our guest today is Dr. Justin Anker, assistant professor in the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at the University of Minnesota. Justin, welcome to the Charleston School of Law podcast.
Oh, thanks, John. Thanks for having me.
Have you ever been to Charleston before?
I haven't. I'm looking forward to visiting at the end of the month for the conference. You mean I don't have to chisel my car free from the ice?
No.
sounds lovely.
No shovels, no parkas, no scrapers. Oh. So let's jump in. 14th Annual Law and Society Symposium. You are going to be on the panel. You come from the education side, not so much the legal side, but with our theme being broader in the sense that it's mental health in the law. How prevalent is substance abuse in the legal profession from your experience?
We recently concluded a study about a year ago. And what we found was similar to what a lot of other people had found, and they looked at the prevalence of substance abuse in the legal profession, is that it's high. It's higher than the general population. One of our findings, about 30% of the people that we screened, so about 3,000 lawyers that were randomly sampled, screened for high-risk hazardous drinking. This can be interpreted in within the range of what you'd see in alcohol abuse or possible alcohol dependence.
Is there any indication as to why that is?
There are a couple things. So one of the things that we, on top of looking at the prevalence of substance abuse and mental health issues within the profession, we wanted to look at predictors. So what are the things within the workplace context that may contribute to the problems that we're seeing? One of the things that we're looking at was between work and family time was a contributor. Other things included high levels of stress. The hours that people were working were extremely high, which may not be so surprising for any lawyers that are listening. So a couple of these things were contributing. Another one is workplace permissiveness towards alcohol. So how the employee or how the lawyer perceived alcohol being a permissiveness within the workplace.
It really sounds to me, and this is a generalization, but it sounds like a breeding ground for depression, anxiety, substance abuse. What programs come about that may be effective in having us address this problem?
That's a good question. These problems, and I'm sure you were aware and other people listening are aware, have been part of the legal profession going back decades, but have only recently just been openly talked about. So the ADA has really been at the forefront of facilitating this awareness, which you couldn't find a better organization to be doing that. And they've created not only facilitating awareness, but a blueprint for change. So the Wellbeing Pledge campaign is an example of this. Campaign provides as a framework, basically, for employers to improve their substance use and mental health problems that face their employees. And one of the things that's important within the program is it helps employers to recognize that substance use and mental health problems are present and that they represent a significant challenge to the profession, that improvements are needed. The good thing with this is that they prioritize very actionable steps towards addressing the issue. Since this occurred in 2018, over 200 legal employers have now signed up for this for a pledge to support mental health and substance use problems within the legal profession. The other campaign that's also initiated by the ABA, actually the ABA Commission on Lawyers Assistance Programs, is the Anti-Stigma Campaign. It's another great example and an important one. So one of the things that it occurs within the legal profession, a lot of type A personalities, a lot of perfectionism, mm-hmm. there's a certain amount of stigma, shame, and fear that are associated with mental health problems and substance use problems that can create barriers for seeking treatment and help. So this campaign is really designed to decrease that stigma surrounding mental health issues. Legal professionals feel more comfortable seeking the help that they need.
People retreat and don't want to talk about that stuff because they think it may jeopardize their career. You, 40 plus peer-reviewed research articles on substance dependence and mental health. And last year, I noted one that you published, a story titled Stress, Drink, Leave. From that, what did you learn?
This was a study I conducted with my collaborator, Patrick Krill, in partnership with the CLA and DC Bar. So just kind of give a little context for the study. Patrick's a leading expert in addressing mental health and substance use in the legal profession. He's worked really closely with the ABA to develop some of these best practice guidelines that I've mentioned before. So for this study, what we wanted to do was focus on the major problems that are facing the profession. So these included high stress, hazardous drinking, and then leaving the profession because of burnout. So we call this the stress, drink, leave problem. You know, and the main objectives of the study were to assess the prevalence of the problem, the amount of stress and drinking and then leaving, attrition. And then importantly, to take a step further to identify what the predictors of these problems are. You know, given emerging evidence suggesting these problems or issues disproportionately affect women with industry, we also wanted to make that a focus too. So identifying factors that may be especially important for women. The main findings that we found was depression, anxiety, and stress are significantly higher in the legal profession compared to the general population. Women experience worse mental health than men, and more women than men considered leaving the legal profession due to mental health problems, burnout, or stress. Approximately a quarter of the women in the study considered leaving because of mental health problems, burnout, and stress, compared to 17% of men. Both of them are high, but there are more women.
It sounds like we're getting better at identifying problems, but finding the proper solutions is a bit more challenging. You mentioned a couple of the programs that are put in place. Have they been effective? Is there any data to show that?
It's hard to tell at this point. It's still relatively new. Okay. So this focus occurred within, you know, relatively recently, you know, 5-6 years ago, where you see this increased awareness and attention that's being paid to the problem. What it really comes down to is being able to measure the, you know, differences between before and after, or having metrics that can accurately measure and the benefit that they're making. And that's still, I think we're still in the process of identifying the problems and creating awareness. And there's no doubt that the initiatives that are taking place are likely having an impact. But for me, with my researcher hat on, you know, we'd want to have some uniform way of measuring that.
Dr. Justin Anker is our guest on the Charleston School of Law podcast. He's an assistant professor in the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at the University of Minnesota. And he'll be with us in just a couple weeks at the 14th Annual Law in Society Symposium here in Charleston, South Carolina, at the Charleston Museum Auditorium, to learn more about our theme, Mental Health and the Law, at charlestonlaw.edu/symposium. Justin, now that we have identified what triggers substance abuse, who is most at risk, how legal professionals respond to stress and anxiety, what actionable recommendations would you encourage the legal industry to consider to solve what this growing concern is right now?
We had 30% of attorneys screening positive for drinking at a level that's frequently associated with abuse or dependence. Only 2% of the people in this study reported ever having received an alcohol use disorder diagnosis. So it's a pretty big disparity. And it suggests that there's this underdiagnosis or even maybe a lack of treatment seeking for this really widespread problem. And it's possibly owing to, you know, we talked about a little bit, the denial, the stigma that's associated with it, and maybe still that professional culture that may at times in specific contexts normalizes heavy drinking. So that really lends itself again to the importance of destigmatization of substance use treatment and substance use problems within the profession, creating a little bit more awareness around these problems and creating a safe and confidential path for individuals to seek help. So that would be this one recommendation, just going off from our results of the study. The other thing that we noted was that workplace permissiveness towards alcohol was associated with heavier drinking. People perceived workplace permissiveness towards alcohol, they were more likely to have problematic drinking. So this finding really underscores the need for employers to be a little bit more conscious of the cultures and environments that they're cultivating, and specifically around substance use.
So we're seeing education, we're seeing awareness, and we're seeing a path for people to take their next step to getting some help. One of the questions I think that kind of arose out of reading some of the studies, there's phrasings used like hazardous drinking and problematic drinking. What are we talking about?
So the way that we measured hazardous drinking in the study through a measure called the Audit C. And the Audit C assesses like frequency of drinking, so number of times that you have six or more drinks on a single occasion, frequency of drinking throughout the week. There's no hard and fast rule on how much it is, but having six or more drinks on a single occasion is a pretty bad sign.
Yeah, there's definitely some indicators there. But I mean, you could be having a single glass of wine a night and it adds up to seven drinks a week. Those are kind of like the foundational things, at least to me, it sounds like that could trigger a more elevated concern over drinking. One becomes two becomes four, then you're going out twice a week and you're drinking four to six drinks on those two nights, but you're only having a single drink the rest of the week, and all of a sudden you're having 20, 25 drinks a week, and it just kind of...
It snowballs. And some people, it's not saying that all drinking is bad. Some people can have that drink every day, and they've done that for decades, and they're completely fine. And others, it snowballs. It can get out of hand. Others have found, and what I found in my research is the reasons for drinking really, really matter. So if you're drinking to cope with stress, anxiety, depression, that can lead to problems. You're significantly more likely to develop a dependence. So there's a study looking at drinking to cope with anxiety. Everyone had an anxiety disorder. One half of the people drank to cope with anxiety, and the other half didn't. And they looked at whether they developed an alcohol use disorder problem 3 years later. Now, those that drank to cope with anxiety were five times more likely to develop an alcohol use disorder.
Our guest has been Dr. Justin Anker, and he will be with us on February 25th in just a couple weeks for our 14th Annual Law and Society Symposium.
Thanks so much, John. Thanks for having me.